Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at e-commerce. As global shoppers switch from Main Street to online, who are the winners and who are the losers? Our panel of international experts and analysts will explain. We'll ask whether e-commerce is a threat to overall corporate profits, with price transparency helping consumers but harming business. And we'll get the Monocle view too, and consider whether the balance being struck between online and offline commercial activity is right. We start with Eric Sheridan, UBS's US Internet and Interactive Entertainment analyst. We're talking about winners and losers. Is that an oversimplification, or does it pay to think in those terms?
I think when you look at the ubiquity of mobile phones, more and more people are doing shopping on their mobile phones. More and more people are thinking first about the convenience of ordering online versus getting into a car, driving to a store, walking around the aisles, and then driving home with something, especially since broadly on a global scale now, you are talking about 1, 2, 3 day delivery for e-commerce items. So the convenience factor is there. The selection is there now that you have these broad marketplaces like Amazon in Western Europe and the U.S., like Alibaba in China, where the selection is becoming near ubiquitous of whatever you'd like to purchase, with the convenience of having delivery right to your front door, sometimes as early as 2 hours, and really mostly within a few days.
Andreas Tomaszewski is UBS sector strategist responsible for consumer staples, food companies, beverage companies, food retailers and such, and recently wrote a report on e-commerce from the UBS CIO. What are some of the key takeaways from his recent research? Looking at the winners first.
We see that consumer companies can benefit in two ways. First, consumer companies can expand the product offering without having to rent or build new physical stores. For example, food and fashion retailers can also offer third-party toys or gardening tools on their webpage without having to invest in new physical stores. And second, online offers consumer companies an entry point into new markets on an asset-light basis. Therefore, we see well-known online retailers and marketplaces with high consumer recognition will benefit the most from this trend. They are usually consumers' first choice to compare or buy products.
And on the other hand, what about the negative impacts of the rise in e-commerce? Andreas Tomaszewski.
They are also losers, as e-commerce will continue to gain market share from traditional retailers who depend on physical stores. This is a big challenge, for example, for traditional department stores, which suffer from falling in-store sales due to growing online competition. E-commerce, in our view, will also put pressure on margins. Prices and services are fully transparent, and shoppers can therefore easily compare prices online. In addition, e-commerce allows the emergence of new competitors, adding additional supply as a result, weighing on pricing power. We, for example, see this trend in the hotel industry, where private offerings through marketplaces increase capacity and reduce pricing power of traditional hotels. In food retail, additional preparation and delivery costs weigh on retailers' margins. So in our report, we also highlighted that at the moment, e-commerce is high single digits of total sales, and that we expect it to grow between 15 and 20% annually in the next few years.
There could be something of a paradox at the heart of this issue. Is e-commerce potentially a threat to overall corporate profits, with price transparency helping consumers but harming business? Eric Sheridan, again.
I think the global consumer is now trained to expect transparency on price, but going beyond transparency, they're also expecting discounted price. So it's discounted price, convenience, ease of use of the product in terms of ordering. So there is a high bar now that's actually putting an undue pressure on overall industry profitability to meet those heightened consumer expectations. So I think that's fair to think that profitability is coming under pressure because of the expectation curve that's now built into the consumer use case for both offline and online commerce.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the e-commerce dynamics in a specific market, Japan, and, amongst others, we'll hear the Monocle view. Stay tuned. Next up on the show, let's hear from Andrew Tuck, Monocle's editor. For the consumer, by and large, e-commerce means that access to goods is wider, they're cheaper, customers' convenience is better served. We asked Andrew whether there's a good balance between these advantages and the virtues of the more traditional shopping experience.
I think there's definitely something interesting here. There's been a shakedown, and in many areas, you know, we see, you know, desolate high streets, you know, areas that haven't survived and haven't managed to kind of fight back. But in other instances, there has been a fight back. Now, from Monocle's perspective, I guess the key thing is we just want people to ask the question, what is lost if you don't do something about bricks and mortar retail? Now, we know that many people who are consumers who are in older age brackets, you know, if you're 70 years old and actually everybody moves to e-commerce, one of those engagements you have every day is when you go to the local store and you meet the shopkeeper or even the person in the supermarket on the till and you have a conversation. You walk out of your home and you see life and activity on the street. You provide shop fronts where people can begin businesses and be entrepreneurs and meet their clients face to face. Now, all those things are hard to quantify until they're lost. And once they're lost, you suddenly notice that actually, my area or my neighborhood isn't actually the kind of place I wanted it to be. It's no longer so buzzy. There's something missing. So there's an emphasis not just on the e-commerce people to say, don't do it, but rather on the people who run stores and run neighborhoods to say, okay, as this transition happens, let's ask ourselves some important questions. What do we need to do to support the neighborhood store? Because suddenly you have people who aren't, as I said, able to go online and order. And suddenly you have, you know, food deserts where actually somebody who's a mum at home who needs to go downstairs and get a bottle of milk or leave their apartment and quickly get a bite to eat for their kids, they can't do it. They have to go online. They have to wait for the delivery truck. And maybe they're not comfortable with doing that. So there's, across all social classes, there are challenges. And there are challenges for our urban environment. So what do we need to do? So at least the questions are being asked.
Andrew makes a very good point about the bricks and mortar shopping experience. Eric Sheridan expands on this theme. He talks in more detail about so-called commoditized commerce, about price, delivery, and convenience for the consumer.
Definitely, and I think if you were to look at some of the joint reports we've done with the consumer teams around the globe at UBS, the winners that they highlight that would be in more traditional offline commerce would be brands that people very readily acknowledge are brands you want to go to direct with or brands that you want to pay a premium for. On the technology side, it would be an Apple. On the consumer side, it would be a Nike, where you want that brand experience. And then when you get down to the retailer level, there's obviously retailers that are known for a certain niche or a certain level of customer service or a certain level of quality of the product they sell that allows them to fight through the noise of e-commerce. But when you think about what we've talked about, which is fairly commoditized e-commerce, so the further removed you get from a unique item, or the further removed you get away from a brand being the important decision point in what you want to purchase, you get into an area known as commoditized commerce. Commoditized commerce is going to come down to price, delivery, and convenience, and that plays to the strengths of the large e-commerce marketplaces.
How well set are companies to meet the challenges of these new business models? Do businesses, indeed, get e-commerce now? In food retail, for example, are there indicators of what the future holds? Andreas Thomasjet explains.
I think it's not so easy just to move from several hundred stores to online. This will be a really big challenge, in particular for example, department stores. But on the other hand, it is what the clients want. The clients want to shop whenever and wherever they are. And due to this increased penetration of smartphones and internet, they really have the opportunity and these tools to order whenever and wherever they are. And I think the companies really have to adjust to the request from the clients. But of course, we will see how this develops in the next few years. What we see, for example, in food retail, we see this in the additional cost due to delivery and to preparation. And this is a challenge for all companies to be more efficient and, yeah, to have a good offering.
How good are companies at managing these challenges now, particularly if you compare e-commerce's disruptive power now with that of its early days? Here's Eric Sheridan.
I think it's the billion-dollar question for many business models. You know, the average consumer wants to shop how they want to in the moment, whether that be picking up their mobile computing device, picking up a laptop, a tablet, or walking through a store aisle. They want that ubiquity. And the companies that are willing to position their business model from delivery, logistics, sourcing inventory, how they allow for price to be discovered on their platform to meet that fickle use case across global consumers are going to be net winners in this, because the consumer has been retrained. The consumer is armed with a supercomputer in every pocket for a billion plus people globally. You will either meet that use case or you will be a net loser in terms of market share.
Next, let's unpack another specific market in a little more detail. Sumito Takeda, Managing Director in Japan, covers the internet sector there for UBS. So if we're covering the key trends in Japanese e-commerce, again, is it a question of winners and losers, or is it more subtle than that?
Even now, Japan's e-commerce market penetration rate compared to the retail real market is very low level, just 5%. This is my, estimate. So Japan's e-commerce market itself is a promising growing market. But one more point is that, in Japan, there are some big general type e-commerce platformers who are providing B2B2C type marketplace, like Rakuten and Yahoo Japan, taking a very big market share. As well, Amazon, our retail type e-commerce names, is also making a good position in this industry. So on the other hand, real retailers, especially real existing big names, are not doing well in Japanese e-commerce market. Many famous real retailers are still struggling to establish their own e-commerce business. So I think, my very basic view for the industry is that industry itself has a potential to grow.
Sumito Takeda elaborates on how the prevailing trends differ for smaller local players compared to the big established companies.
I think such kind of the, very O2O, online to offline type, integration will be very big potential for the future Japanese e-commerce market. It should be very beneficial, especially for the small B local business players and local retailers. On the other hand, I think big retail names will continue to be struggle in this moment, I think. But more that, Japanese existing e-commerce players like Rakuten, Yahoo Japan, Amazon, these big platformers' strategy is very simple. Everybody is now focusing to get a loyal customer in the platform. Because thanks to the, good penetration rate of the smartphone, now acquiring the one loyal customer is quite important for the e-commerce names. Because once they could get the one loyal customer, lifetime value they can expect is bigger than before, because the frequency of the user usage is increasing, because smartphone is very easy to use and easy to buy many articles. I'm very, interested in the current strategy of that of Amazon, Rakuten, Yahoo Japan, these three major, big platformers. For example, Amazon started to integrate their Amazon Prime service, quick delivery service, and Amazon Prime Video, Amazon Prime Music, it's a digital content service. If you subscribe to Amazon Prime, you can also watch the Amazon Prime Video for free.
A final thought from Monocle editor Andrew Tuck. One point that's often repeated is the supposedly democratizing impact of online, the consequence of those many lower barriers to entry. But does this necessarily follow, or should we look to bricks and mortar, to smaller scale, to more specialism, as some revised tenets for the best new businesses?
Look, we have a feeling that the word startup has been co-opted just to mean being in the technology space. So if you do something in technology, suddenly it's priced and valued as a company 10 times more than doing something in bricks and mortar. We need a generation of people who ignore that thinking and do things with passion and care. I think the important thing is here to remember is that sometimes it's not a democracy online. If you're entering to the space, for example, selling books, you have a better chance these days with being, you know, a gritty, involved, ambitious, independent than going online. Because who are you going to be up against? You're going to be up against somebody whose name we know very well, who will blast you out of business because they have cheaper prices, they can beat you at everything, they can beat you in delivery time. So it's speciality, it's service, it's connection with customer, and then maybe you're better on a high street. Maybe you're better than not kind of trying to be online, because also you find wherever you go, there's then someone trying to take a cut of your business. At first, it seems cheap, but as you expand, as we've seen with many, many e-commerce people, they've then decided that they need to be back on the high street. They need to have a bricks and mortar presence to kind of tell their story. And finally, on this, you know, we're not Luddites about this. We're not crazy about this. You know, we're a brand that depends on e-commerce, that sells many products online, has our own physical stores. But it's the merry dance of those things together. We're always trying to find that synthesis between analog and digital that brings about something that is kind of magical in the end.
And that's Andrew Tuck bringing us to the end of this 85th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.